If it please the court, I am David Fasciolo, Assistant Public Defender and counsel for Sylvester Miller. Your Honors, Sylvester Miller was charged with 8 counts of rape in the first degree and 1 count of continuing sexual abuse of a child. After the jury returned its verdict, they found him guilty of each of these counts. During trial, the witnesses that testified were his daughter, Alicia, his son, Tony, Dr. DeJong, and Detective Deanna Smith. In addition, the state introduced into evidence my client's videotaped statement. The trial presented a number of areas of concern, but if it pleases the court, I'm going to try to concentrate on 3 particular issues and incidental issues therein, unless the court directs questions elsewhere. The issues that I think that I would like to ask this court to entertain this morning are the issue of whether or not my client should have been granted lesser included offenses of unlawful sexual contact second for the rape first, whether the court should have redacted references to marijuana use in a question by the officer during the videotaped statement, and whether the court should have declared a mistrial when Alicia, the daughter, indicated when the state opened the door in questioning that there had been a prior incident in Jamaica like this. Your Honor, lesser included offenses are clearly defined by our code, and the state in its brief concedes that unlawful sexual contact second is normally a lesser included offense of rape first. The issue is whether or not there was a rational basis in the evidence for the court to afford us the lesser included offense instruction for the jury. In this case, it is not controverted that Alicia, the daughter, recalled several instances where her father may have engaged in acts that the state alleged were rape under our section of the code. However, in the videotape, my client indicated at several points that he did not commit any crime against his daughter, that he did not have sex with her, though he never defined sex, that he never had intercourse with her, though he never uses a definition for the word intercourse. Moreover, he did indicate that he was puzzled by the entirety of the allegation against him. He indicated this puzzlement at numerous times in the videotape statement. He tried to conjecture how anything could have happened that could even possibly fit what Alicia was accusing him of. And indeed, at one point he indicated, and this is approximately 20 minutes into that videotape, that sometimes he would sleep with her, that he might hold her or he might rub her. Counsel,
could I stop you there?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because the trial judge, in making his ruling denying your request, said that the only evidence in support of a lesser included offense would be the hugging. And the trial court made no reference to him having acknowledged that he might have rubbed his daughter. And I notice in your brief, you do not have that in quotes. Is that a direct quote from his testimony or not?
Your Honor, my recollection from reviewing the videotape, both for the brief and for trial, was that he indicated that he would hold her closely. And I don't remember for sure if there was a reference in that tape to rubbing her, but I do know that in that 2-minute section from 19 minutes into 21 minutes is where that factor is addressed. But even if counsel had only raised it in terms of the rubbing, the court had listened to the videotape, and counsel was trying to ask the court for the instruction because the jury is supposed to be given a full panoply of ways of reconciling the evidence.
Well, but isn't it correct that if what the father claimed to have done was that he hugged his daughter, that does not constitute a crime, and therefore it would not constitute any lesser included offense?
Your Honor, he did state that he actually did hold her closely. He also indicated that he did so on numerous occasions, and he indicated this in direct response to the officer trying to ask him how this could have possibly happened. So it's clear that my client was trying to explain his behavior.
Right,
we were trying
but
to...
But if his behavior did not include any crime, then what's the basis for a lesser included offense?
It may have. If the jury did not fully believe Alicia's version of the facts, and the jury believed that my client did either rub or hold his daughter,
Wait a second. If the jury believed that he held the daughter, they were entitled to give him a find him guilty of a lesser included offense?
If they believed he held or rubbed that daughter at any time.
Well, forget the rubbed.
Your Honor. Let's talk about her. It's holding her.
Yeah.
Or his holding her closely, as he referred. If the jury believed that he had done so, because he was responding in the videotape to whether or not he had committed any acts against her, the jury should have been able to determine whether Alicia is absolutely correct in saying that he actually penetrated her and took himself and had sex with her in the ways that were described in the brief, or whether or not my client, proffering that the most he recalls doing was holding her or holding her closely, may have been in direct reference to the allegations. The jury is supposed to be the sole province of deciding these facts.
And so you're saying the jury can decide that somebody committed a crime by holding his daughter?
Your Honor, if the holding occurred in the context of what Alicia was alleging, yes, the jury could compromise its thought processes, not in the sense of compromising a verdict, but in terms of reconciling the facts. The jury instruction they're given says that they have the duty to reconcile facts to the extent that they can. And if they believe that when Alicia is alleging that my client actually engaged in sexual intercourse with her, and my client, they also believe, may have only been holding her, they can reconcile that the facts may have occurred anywhere between those two premises. And I believe that the lesser included instruction in that case is absolutely warranted. The jury instruction says, if you should find the evidence in this case to be in conflict, then it is your duty to reconcile the conflict if you can. If you cannot reconcile conflicts, it's your duty to give credit to the testimony worthy of credit, and you may disregard that portion which is not worthy of your credit. So what the judge did was, by interpreting the issue of it just being a hug, himself having heard the videotape, he prevented the jury from entertaining the full panoply of what could have occurred factually from either the issue of whether it was mere contact or whether it was rape. And contact also has a definition that allows a reasonableness element to be entertained in the jury's deliberation of whether my client actually had the intent to commit the crime. In addition,
I'm confused because I had read in your brief on page 12 a precise citation to the untranscribed videotape statement where the sentence appears, he admitted he might hug her tight a little or maybe rubbed her a little bit. And then there's a precise citation to 20:54:37.
That's my recollection of where it was. When Your Honor, when Justice Berger asked me if that was what he said, I am only going by my recollection as I inserted in the brief after reviewing that particular videotape. I'm not trying to concede an issue.
And you say the videotape must be reviewed de novo.
Your Honor, my understanding is that when you do not have evidence that's easy to look through from the transcript, that it's the duty of the court normally to actually look at the videotape to see if there's evidence that supports the position that's alleged by the parties. Since it is evidence, that's what I'm urging the court to do.
So if we were to do it, we would be looking for whether or not there was a statement by your client that he rubbed his daughter a little bit.
Or held her
on the theory
closely
that you've just explored with Justice
yes.
Berger, that hugging wouldn't be unlawful sexual contact, but rubbing her a little bit might?
It may be if it's in direct answer to his attempt to try to explain how any of these allegations could have occurred. Because the jury is allowed to believe part of what my client said and part of what Alicia said. And if they believe that my client's actual holding her closely, or even if rubbing is in there, as I recall it, and cited, then the jury must have had the opportunity to fully weigh this.
Well, right now the situation is you think it may be in the videotape. The trial judge obviously thought the closest thing to unlawful sexual contact was hugging and that was not unlawful sexual contact, correct?
Your Honor, that is correct, but I do want to note that when I particularly put it on the record, I did try to indicate the area of concern. If I did not actually reference the other portions of the tape that were actually part of this reference to hugging and the like, I would hope that the court would still entertain looking at it, even if it would change the degree of review, because this was the reason we were asking for it, the lesser included. The prayer conference also, if I remember correctly, occurred in disjointed fashion, so I don't want the court to feel that counsel was in any way dilatory in his attempt to create the record below. Your Honor, there are a couple of other issues that I think the court should entertain in this matter. One of the issues that we mentioned at trial was we asked the court to redact any reference to the use of marijuana and the smoking of marijuana, possibly in a question form, which was admittedly denied. The prosecutor on the record summarized that statement pretty clearly. He stated, in questioning the defendant, the detective may say, she's saying, maybe he might have forgotten about this, maybe he might have been intoxicated, and her line of question is, maybe you came home, you were drunk, maybe you smoked some pot, and you got in bed and you didn't realize what you were doing. At this point, we objected because the reference to smoking marijuana, even in question format, we felt created a pejorative element, and we asked the court to excise it and redact it. Interestingly, overnight the court did look at the tape, and it said that it didn't feel it was necessary solely because it was my client answering a question negatively. We had, at the very beginning of this trial, asked the court for an instruction which would be whether or not jurors would give greater credence to a police officer than to a fact witness other than a police officer. That was denied. We have no way of knowing whether or not the jurors, in their particularity of analysis in the jury room.
Why was that voir dire question to the veneer denied?
The judge felt that it was because the officer wasn't that actively involved in the investigation. And the officer, we disagree with that because the officer is the one that conducted the interrogation of my client and who also did interrogations of Alicia. And I believe she directed the interrogation of Tony, who testified in court.
Did she testify?
The officer did testify, partly for reference to the statement. But the officer also, when she testified, indicated that when she would conduct these interviews, she would use various techniques, such as hypotheticals. And one of the
is there any evidence that your client ever smoked marijuana?
No, Your Honor, but I'm very fearful that the court, by not allowing that to be excised, may have inadvertently invited prejudice because my client speaks.
Well, the purpose of my question is to see whether there was a basis for that. You remember in Weddington, and there was a question about, isn't that your modus operandi to prey on loose white women? And there was no basis for asking the question about loose white women. So here, if the person never smoked marijuana, or never consumed alcoholic beverages, it seems unusual to say, well, maybe it was one of those times you smoked marijuana.
My client actually did at some point on that videotape mention that he would drink, but he didn't ever mention marijuana. But our fear was my client spoke with a very thick Jamaican accent. And my client, in my opinion, even in denial of that, the jury might not have been able to weigh what was the evidence of my client and what was just the question. And especially in light of their not being able to give some voir dire earlier to determine how they would weigh a police officer. The most important thing that scared counsel in this case, and upset counsel because of knowing the whole history of Delaware with regard to prejudice, the fact that sometimes people associate inappropriately the Rastafarian alleged custom of smoking marijuana for religious as well as cultural purposes with Jamaicans in general, was one of the reasons that counsel jumped up with offense at this particular point.
Well, is the question about police officers, when you know a police officer is going to testify, whether a juror would believe a police officer over that of any other witness, isn't that standard?
Your Honor, I'm upset that it was not given. It is not always standard.
Well, it's either standard or it's not.
I'm going to tell you why I say that.
I'm confused. But
I'm going to give you a good illustration. I propose normally two different instructions in my voir dire for the question about a police officer statement, one of which was prepared by a judge of the Superior Court about 5 years ago, and one of which I was prepared on. One of them comes directly from our case law, and I have, every time I've had a trial, requested that voir dire. And there are occasions like this. I've had one other occasion that I can recall where judges have deviated from that question, and I don't know that it's acceptable. But in this case, I don't think it was acceptable because the judge's rationale didn't really hold. Because the judge's rationale was that the officer wasn't an important witness, but he was important even if he was only the witness that introduced the 3705 statement, the videotape. So that's why I tell you it is and it isn't. The third issue that we raised that I wanted to address was simply the prosecutor elicited testimony with regard to another incident, and possibly involving my client. The judge jumped to that conclusion, and everyone else did. The judge cut them off. I made my objection as soon as I could, but what is interesting, the judge said he couldn't think of a way to cure this.
And he simply doesn't the record reflect that there was some confusion about whether everyone had heard the answer?
That is correct, and that also causes a bit of concern to counsel because we don't know what the jury heard and what they didn't hear. The judge heard it. The court reporter heard it. They were closer to the jury than counsel. Counsel at the far end of the room, meaning me, heard the last part of it, and counsel at the state may or may not have heard it. So the judge, in exercising what he thought was caution and wanting to complete a trial that had already been very difficult, chose, rather than to grant the mistrial, which I think was necessitated and which would have served the interest of justice, simply to cut off the questioning and proceed to another area, even though the state had opened this up. That's very interesting how it even came to be, because the state asked Alicia why it took her so long to talk to anyone. And they mentioned Michelle, her stepmother, and then they also mentioned her Aunt Fiona. And she stated, because my Aunt Fiona told me that there was that something like this happened in Jamaica, and or words very close to that effect. And it was clear that the judge and everyone who addressed this at sidebar felt this was clearly referring to my client. And, Your Honor, if the jury heard that without any kind of curative, Your Honors, that would be devastating for people who simply believe that a fair trial requires us to be absolutely certain that the jury has a fair hearing of the evidence.
You're in your rebuttal. Did you want to save any time?
I would like to stop at this point, and I will use whatever's left for rebuttal if necessary. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, if it pleases the court. Regarding the first issue, well, in the interest of full disclosure, I have not viewed the videotape. I will simply assume, for the sake of argument, that the defendant did, in the context of the statement, say that he occasionally would rub his daughter. But this was made in the context of, all I did was hug my daughter. All I did was show affection to my daughter, sometimes physical affection, but I never rubbed her, say, in her private parts. I mean, the whole point of his statement was that I did not sexually molest my daughter. Regardless of what I did, I have two sons and a daughter, and I hug them, and I still do. And sometimes when I hug them, I will rub them, too. But I don't think my two sons or my daughter would ever have accused me of being somehow that physical contact is in any way, shape, or form improper. And I think based on the trial judge's ruling and Mr. Fasciola's recollection of the videotape, I don't think there is any rational basis on that video. For a lesser included offense instruction. And to have given that instruction would simply be to invite some kind of compromise verdict, not based on any facts of record. So I would ask the court to, just based on the representations of what is on that videotape, to affirm the trial judge's decision in that regard. As to the victim's partial answer, and I've said that's non-responsive answer to the prosecutor's question. Why the victim in these kinds of cases, particularly child sexual abuse, but also sometimes in adult rape cases, does not immediately disclose what has happened is always an issue. And asking the victim why is simply looking for the answer that she did give time and again, I was frightened. I was scared, which is why children don't disclose. They're frightened. They're scared. They're confused. They don't know what's going on. I remember one part of the testimony, Anthony saying, well, when she told me, my sister told me about that, I said, I don't know what to do. You know, I just, they're children. They're confused. They don't know what to do. And it's always an issue. Why didn't you disclose earlier? So I don't think
we dealt with that in the 1980s in the Wheat case and in the Powell case about delayed disclosure, recantation, and expert testimony.
Right.
But that wasn't part of the state's theory here. By the time they got to trial, they thought this person was old enough that they would just give a straightforward account.
Right.
So, and there was no curative instruction. Why shouldn't the judge have done something?
Regarding, in this, when she made this
right.
statement
reference
about
the Jamaica.
Well, the judge, as I read the transcript, the judge is caught this, because he's looking at the monitor and getting it right from the court reporter who's sitting right next to the witness. And the judge caught this. Neither defense counsel nor the prosecutor heard what she said. The judge reads it and goes, all right, everybody, come to sidebar. We got a problem here. If I saw this correctly, she was about to say something about some incident that occurred in Jamaica.
Let me interrupt just a minute.
Yeah.
You say neither the defense counsel nor the prosecutor heard it.
Yeah.
And we just heard Mr. Fasciello, who was the defense counsel, say he heard the last part of it. And that he didn't know whether the prosecutor heard it or not. Does the record support your view that the defense counsel and the prosecutor both stated on the record they didn't hear it?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is my page 16. I think I have that. The judge repeated the answer and defense counsel and asked defense counsel what remedy he, and this is page, appendix page 83. The judge brings up Mr. Fasciola there on page 138. I actually was almost ready to object, but I wasn't sure what was said because I couldn't hear it. Now, this is after the judge told them about it. He was about to talk about an incident in Jamaica. And then, you know, he tells the prosecutor and the and defense counsel, and as I read the transcript, neither one of them really could hear her. And I think the judge here said, well, the best thing to do is just continue on. I interrupted the question. She never got it out. Of course, even from the answer, there's nothing indicating from the answer that the incident in Jamaica involved the defendant. It's just the grandmother comes from the defendant and comes from Jamaica, rather. But the trial judge, I think, wisely interrupted it because it may have something to do with the defendant. We just don't know at this point. It's something about an incident like this that happened in Jamaica, some kind of incident of child abuse that the grandmother was aware of that happened in Jamaica that may or may not have involved the defendant. But I think the trial judge did what needed to be done, and I certainly don't think in the context here that some kind of cautionary instruction was called for, because that would simply alert the jury, who in all likelihood didn't hear the statement anyhow, the beginning of the answer, this partial answer, just go on and avoid this. And that's what the prosecutor did. So it's unfortunate that she started this answer, and it does sound like it was potentially prejudicial. We don't know whether it would have turned out to be prejudicial or not, but at least was potentially, and the trial judge interrupted it, and I think exercised his discretion in a principled manner in the way in which this was handled, and I certainly can't see any better way to handle it. References to possibility of being under the influence of either alcohol or marijuana, I think the court mentioned the Weddington case, the loose white women case, that everybody will always, there are certain cases that just have special names to them. We don't even need to say the case name. It's the Loose White Women case. The Loose White Women case, that question just came out of nowhere, and it came from the prosecutor during examination. It was not, this is somewhat different. Here the police officer is questioning the defendant and is trying to get, as police officers do, trying to get the defendant to say something incriminating in various and sundry ways that they have.
Well, let's, let's assume all that's entirely proper. There's no law that says the police can't trick people into confessing the crimes they didn't commit. We all know that from television. But why wasn't it redacted?
I'm sorry?
Why wasn't it redacted?
The trial judge didn't see any reason to. Said that there was no potential prejudice here. I mean, the officer's saying, well, did you perhaps, were you under the influence at the time? The defendant
there's
said,
a distinction
no.
between alcoholic beverages, which adults can purchase legally, and marijuana, which is still a crime. And the suggestion is that he might have been using illegal drugs. Isn't that what the question suggests?
No, it's simply, no, I disagree, sir. It's had the prosecutor said, well, look, I know you Jamaicans all smoke marijuana because you're Rastafarians, which is, of course, not a connection that I'm going to make immediately, but that was the objection. Then I would say yes, certainly. But simply asking, well, maybe you were under the influence.
Well, let's take a hypothetical. Let's suppose this is the police officer saying in a different context, well, maybe you hit this person because you used to hit your wife. When did you stop beating your wife?
Well, the implication there certainly would be, well, the officer is saying in the context of that question that I know you used to beat your wife. Now, the officer here in the questions that she asks here is never saying, I know. Or even implying that I know you smoke marijuana. He said, well, maybe you were under the influence and you don't remember of whatever.
So you're saying the jury, the officer could have basically suggested anything. Maybe you were using heroin, maybe you're sure. using whatever, all of which would be illegal substances, and the jury would just think, well, gee, you know, that's irrelevant. It doesn't affect me that the officer has reason to believe maybe this person was doing these terrible things to his daughter because he was using illegal substances.
If the officer had harped on it over and over and over again, rather than simply one or two questions, yes, I would agree. Well, that's over the edge, and that should be redacted because that starts to indicate, well, maybe the officer does know something. But I think in the context here, and I think it's one or two questions, he said, well, maybe this. As the officer said, well, maybe this, maybe this, maybe this. It's just one of the maybes that the officer is throwing out, trying to get the defendant to say, well, maybe that's the case. You know, there's at least some inkling of guilt there. But the defendant, again, the defendant, as the trial judge pointed out, simply said, no.
Mr. Allen, do you think there's any significance, as the defense counsel points out, to the fact that the defendant in this case was Jamaican and the drug mentioned by the police officer was marijuana as opposed to, let's say, cocaine?
I know I'm going to defer to Mr. Fasciolo's expertise as to Jamaican. It's just not the connection. You know, Jamaican, Rastafarian, and marijuana. All I can say, it's not the connection that would immediately come to my mind. The only thing I can think of Jamaica is Jamaican Blue Mountain, which I think is coffee and not marijuana. And it's a place where people go on vacation. That it's a place where lots of marijuana comes from. I think, actually,
you're pretty confident that among the 12 people on the jury, no one would have pointed that out in the jury room. They'd lived
maybe
as sheltered a life as you, and they wouldn't have made that connection.
It's not, again, all I can say is not a connection I would make. They had said they were from, if he had said he was from British Columbia, which I understand is where all the good marijuana comes from these days, maybe.
Well, I'd strike my other comment. Your life is nowhere near as sheltered as I thought.
Well, and how do we look at this from a balancing perspective? There's a request to redact it, and why leave it in? I mean, you've got a case where you have a victim that's pretty clear about the things that happen, and why suggest, you know, that the person might have been involved in using illegal drugs? It doesn't seem to add a lot to the state's case. And when you think about the prejudice to the defendant, that there's a suggestion he was doing these terrible things because maybe he was using illegal drugs, that would seem to be the type of thing you'd want to avoid.
Well, I guess 2 points. The first point is the officer was not suggesting that he was doing these things because he was using illegal drugs. Perhaps he didn't remember. Maybe he was having some memory problems.
Now, do you think that's a distinction that the jury focused on right away?
Well, that's what the officer was asking. Perhaps you did these, but you didn't remember them because you were drunk or you were high. But the other one is, the other point I think probably more significant is that this is the essence of discretion here. This is why we have trial judges, to make these calls. And here the judge did the 403 balancing and said, well, you know, the potential prejudice here is so slight that I'm not going to require the redaction. Again, this is a discretionary call, the type of discretionary calls that trial judges make. And the trial judge did not see the potential for prejudice that Your Honor sees. But
no, I'm not saying I see it. We're trying to decide impartially whether this is something that could have affected the jury's verdict adversely.
We
like trials decided on the basis of admissible evidence. And the purpose of the court's question are trying to see why this is the way to conduct trials in Delaware by offering evidence that perhaps the criminal conduct was either engaged in or not remembered because the person was involved in the use of illegal drugs, if there's no basis to assume the person ever used illegal drugs. And I guess the state's position is, it's perfectly proper to ask any witness, well, you say you don't remember. Is that because you were using marijuana at the time? Could you ask a witness on the witness stand that question?
Well, possibly. It depends on the context.
Well, but the context Justice Holland already gave you, and that is the absence of any evidence to suggest that the witness had ever used or ever contemplated using the drug. Could you have asked the question of a witness in that context? And expect the judge in the wise, thoughtful exercise of her discretion to overrule an objection to the question.
Oh, I think a judge in the exercise of discretion would want to know whether there was any basis for asking that question.
And when they were told, nothing in the record that I know of, Your Honor.
Then the judge would say, no, you can't ask that question.
Then why is that different than the state first not agreeing to redact it, if asked, and then the trial judge exercising discretion and letting the jury hear it here?
Well, I think I will defend the judge's decision in this way, that this is the police officer trying to get a confession out of the defendant and using certain techniques to do that.
The Chief Justice has already pointed out, the law is pretty clear, that's proper police work. No one's contending the police couldn't do that. The question is, when you're going to present it to the jury, why shouldn't it have been redacted?
Because I think the jury should see all the techniques that the officer used.
Was this perhaps just a practical decision? I mean, we're not talking about a transcript here. We're talking about a videotape, right?
Yes.
And redacting a videotape is probably a process that takes a couple of days of, you know, sending it out somewhere or whatever, and would have slowed down the trial.
This is very possible. I do not have, again, in my sheltered life, I never tried to cut out a portion of a videotape. I know back in the old reel-to-reel days, it was pretty easy to chop out a piece of tape and splice it back together again with Scotch tape, if that's all you had. But I'm not quite sure what's involved with the videotape. That may have very well have been in the one of the things that the trial judge was weighing, that it would have slowed down the trial.
But we do agree that in a trial with a witness on the stand who says, in response to a question by the prosecutor, I don't remember what happened that night. The prosecutor couldn't say, well, is that because you were on marijuana?
Right. Now, that, I think, I certainly think that would be proper. I just, that certainly gives me the willies. I'm not sure that's a legal term, but instinct after a while does play a role. That would certainly be an improper question, but in the context of the police officer using it during the interrogation, using all police officers' tricks to get the defendant to admit something, I think, why not show the jury the whole truth? Why chop the interrogation up and give the jury a bowdlerized version of it? Why not let them see the whole thing? Why not let them see all the tricks the police officer used? I realize that wasn't the rationale, but that the judge used, but I think it's a good rationale. After all, we do.
But you would think that if that was compelling, the judge would say, during the course of the videotape, you're going to hear a question about marijuana and alcohol, and you ought to know that the police are allowed to ask those questions, even if they have no basis in fact to ask them. It's normal police work, and in this particular case, there's no reason to think that the defendant was using drugs or alcohol.
Well, certainly I would have absolutely no problem with a cautionary instruction like that prior to as long as that instruction, taking the defense point of view, I would wonder if that by telling the jury that the police officer is not doing anything improper, that may signal to the jury that I sort of puff up the credibility of the police officer, I suppose. That's the only possible problem I would have with an instruction like that. I would tend to comment that the police officer is really doing good police work here. I don't know.
Spend some time on this, but tell me the state's, bottom line, so to speak. You have a victim who pretty clearly says criminal acts occurred, and you have a defendant that says, I don't remember, I don't know why they would say that. Why is it important for the jury to know that maybe he doesn't remember because he was using drugs or alcohol?
Well, it's not important for the jury to know that. As a matter of fact, he denied. But the only point I was making is that I think it's probably important for the jury to see the entire interrogation. Again, it's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I think the default is the whole truth, and there should be a good reason before the whole truth is not put before the trier of fact, and rather than the expurgated version, as we perhaps too often do.
Thank you, Mr.
That's
Donovan.
My only. Thank you.
Mr. Vestula, did you ask for any type of instruction once the judge ruled the whole tape was going in?
No, I asked only for the redaction, and from my recollection of the record, the judge never really clearly indicated he had done any kind of weighing of the probative versus the prejudicial value, because he felt that it was a question, and because my client said he denied it, that it wasn't as important. And we felt that just the fact that it was in there was of grave importance. But we did not ask for the curative, and that's something that counsel will always take under advisement in future cases. With regard to the issue Your Honor, Justice Berger asked about redaction, whether it's done easily, it is often done easily. And sometimes they just simply will, since this was at the end of the tape, they'll simply stop the claimant and do the redaction, and counsel will stipulate it into the record. And that's what would have happened in this case, because counsel for the state and counsel for the defense spent exhaustive hours preparing for this. With regard to the first issue, I must strongly urge the court that the entire context of my client's trying to explain things was when he was confronted with these allegations. And I think that even if his attempts to explain them seem strained, that the jury should be able to weigh whether my client's version was somewhere the basis of what happened rather than being forced to accept either totally or completely reject the state's version of the facts as they were presented by Alicia and her brother. That is all that I really have to direct towards the rebuttal. If your honors have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. If not, then I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.